Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with Eric Wetterling, also known as the Hedgeless Horseman. And Eric runs the hedgelesshorseman.com, which we'll have a link to below this interview. Always great to have you on the show, Eric, just to get your thoughts on the resource sector, in particular, our beloved junior mining stocks. And I know that you don't get hung up in the daily swings of the price in gold or silver or copper or zinc. You're just looking at which companies are building good value, and you're looking at accumulating good value positions over time that you believe will grow regardless of the metals price just because they're doing the good work. So I guess let's maybe start there. Are there any general comments you have on these markets as far as the way the junior miners are trading for most people?
Yeah, I mean, I think this sector has been cheap for a long time, and it's been pretty much dirt cheap for 45 months, I would say. And I mean, like I've said before, you know, people always say buy low, sell high, and remind others of that. Buy when there's blood in the streets. I mean, when you look at the gap between junior valuations to the majors and to gold, I mean, this is basically the best risk reward, increasingly so, become even better that I've ever seen, way better than 2015-16 bottom. And I still see people like complaining because, of course, it's one thing to say buy low, sell high. But when it actually happens, people sell because they're not going higher yet. So, I mean, this is an absolute no-brainer. If your simple strategy is buy low, sell high, almost regardless if you're into growth or optionality plays, etc. I mean, this is pretty much it. I mean, I've been seeing some juniors, I mean, barely any trading. And with gold, silver up today, some are even being sold off. So it's like, you don't need to overthink things. This is really cheap. I'm going to make, in my opinion, a lot of money. It's just that I don't know when. But all I know, and the important thing, is that almost everything is cheap. And if you can pick up high-quality stores that are cheap, I mean, believe me, sentiment is going to change like it always has. We reached a sentiment high just in 2020, and still people ask me, will sentiment ever change? It's like, there's no evidence of that not happening. Sentiment not changing. It's going to happen. It's just I don't have any idea when. I just now know it's cheap and it's not going to be cheap forever. That's why I'm buying.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think that's a fair comment. And I do have a question for you about the kinds of companies you want to position in. I know you focus mostly on the juniors, not on the Barricks and the Newmonts of the world, and not really on the royalty companies. But many people do rotate into those safer names, Eric, you know, like the Newmonts or like the Franco Nevadas or Royal Golds in the royalty space, because they feel they're a little safer, a little more defensive. But the reverse of that is also true. They're not going to move up as much when we finally see a turn in the market. So is that why you still have more comfort diving down into more of the junior space and the mid-cap and small-cap stocks?
Yeah, I mean, from, I guess, a contrarian perspective, even though I don't consider myself a contrarian, I just consider myself a value investor, which looks like a contrarian. Because, okay, if you're a value investor, what do you like the most? Something that is incredibly cheap. When is it incredibly cheap? When it's been sold off or when it's hated. So, I mean, you naturally become a contrarian at face value simply by being a value investor. And so I'm going on the offense when everybody's playing defense. And like I've seen in previous bottoms, yes, the juniors, especially the microcap companies, they get punished the hardest. They bottom later than the majors. But if you measure from bottom to peak, from a sentiment bottom to a sentiment peak, they tend to move the most. I mean, 2015-16, a bunch of companies up 600%. You didn't see Barrick up 600%. So it's like when everybody's running around with hair on their fire and selling the ones they assume to be, quote, risky. I mean, if you're buying a junior, let's say a high-quality junior, close to enterprise value of zero, which, you know, theoretically you're not really taking any risk, but you feel like, yeah, I'm safe in a larger producer. I mean, there's a million things that can go wrong for a producer that I don't even know of. But for a, you know, a junior with not too many moving parts, etc., especially if it's a drill play, I mean, the typical things that can go wrong is that they can miss or they can hit. So, I mean, that people call that risky, let's say. But that's actually, to me, that I can at least understand the risk fully, while I don't have a, you know, a clue about how to operate a mine or everything that can go wrong there. Because we've seen, like, recently a bunch of developers, for example, startup juniors, they are running into all kinds of problems on the back of inflation and whatnot. Like, I think it was Argonaut Gold, Pure Gold Mining, one of my favorites, Novo Resources. So it's like, yeah, did I foresee any of that in any of those cases? Absolutely not. So I typically don't try to guess that stuff. That's outside my circle of competence. But I can understand real risk. And right now, they're really cheap. So typically, all the real risk you can imagine is sometimes priced in already. So to me, that doesn't make them risky. That just makes them absolutely brain dead cheap. So the risks are to the upside, whereas in Barrick or Franco-Nevada, it's like, how much upside is there in those companies, especially with a neutral gold price, but how much downside is it? I don't like that risk reward at all.
I think that's a good point, Eric, but we are going to discuss one that is going to be a producer, but also has that exploration upside, and I think they're just killing it with the drill bit, and that is i80 Gold. You had mentioned to me you thought this was interesting, and that stood out to me, Eric, because you normally are in the earlier stage explorers and discovery stories, or maybe some that have a margin of safety where they have some ounces in the ground, but they're still hitting. But why did you get interested in i80 Gold based on what you just said on some of the producers and some of the risks they have? What has your attention with this company?
Yeah, that's an astute observation. I reluctantly have been buying some i80. I just simply think that there's still so much upside potential that it offsets the downside risk with them trying to, you know, start up an operation, et cetera. And given where the jurisdiction is, I mean, I don't know how good of an operator they will be, but I know that Nevada Gold Mines is a good operator and are mining stuff that they're drilling right now. So it's like, do I think that regardless of how well they do it, let's say, will that be tangible, valuable success? I mean, they've been drilling monster holes in like, I don't know, 2 or 3 deposits already. Holes you don't see often, holes any junior would kill for. I mean, my blue sky case for, let's say, you know, the long shot in New Legacy Gold was that, okay, if they find a Carlin monster, that could be worth, you know, billions. Okay. I mean, these guys, i80, they at least have what I would deem 2 like world-class top-tier deposits already, and they're pumping out, you know, 78.6 meters of 7.1 grams per ton. I mean, how often do you see stuff like that? So if you divide the whole market cap with the 4 products and they have a mill that can treat refractory ore, I mean, there's no way that's not very cheap based on the sum of its parts. And since they have such good results in such a good jurisdiction and have a mill, etc. So that's one where I think they can materially increase the value of the company, which I like, and that's why I don't like Barrick, because they don't have an easy time doubling their value. So you need to get bailed out by gold price. These guys, I think they can materially increase the value, and I think they're starting off from an undervalued position already. So that's the kind of risk reward I really like. When it comes to the production story, that's a little bit more iffy, because when the rubber meets the road, yes, a deposit can look great at face value, but if, you know, they don't operate it in the correct way, let's say, that's gonna, you know, lead to disappointment, at least in the hands of the current operating team and for shareholders, even though that might be worth a lot more for Nevada Gold Mines.
I think that's an interesting observation, Eric, because we were talking a lot with our good friend Jordan Royburn, and he mentioned that the holy grail of companies that he's looking for are producers of gold or silver that have huge exploration upside, and where the exploration upside may actually drive the company more than the production story. And there's not a lot of stories like that, because most producers are so large that if they hit with the drill bit, it's not going to really move the needle much. But in addition to some of those drill holes you mentioned from i80, I mean, they just came out with some yesterday where it was 28 grams per ton gold over 18 meters, almost 19 meters, 15 grams per ton gold over 14 meters. And some of those ones you were referencing where they had 78 meters of 7 grams or 41 meters of 10 grams. If a junior put those out, if a small drill play put those out, that would be the talk of the town. People would be high-fiving each other. That company would be up double digits, 20, 30%. So it still didn't have that kind of a move, probably because they have that production side. But are you at least open to looking at other companies where, yeah, they may have a production story, but really it's the exploration that has you excited about it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's a good point by, I mean, Jordan. And I totally agree with that, because it's like, I want a gold bull to be a bonus, not a prerequisite, let's say, that you're just waiting for the gold bull. Of course, we know how sentiment works, that it's hard. I mean, well, at the same time, it's like gold hit 2000 not long ago, and the junior sector didn't reflect that at all. So it's like you can't even bank on when gold is doing well and the sector is near peak valuable. That's not even enough sometimes, because sentiment is going to do what sentiment does. And we can't, of course, know that. But I want to stack the odds in my favor that if I buy a company that I think can increase the underlying value by, let's say, 100% over 2 years. Yes, I think the risk is going to be to the upside, because if the market value is announced at some given number right now, when they increase the ounces to twice as much, that should mean that if the sentiment is exactly the same, it should still be valued higher. So that's what I like to do. I like to hodl growth stories where the future success or, you know, balance of probability success is not priced in at all today. Preferably not even the bank success isn't even priced in, which I think is the case now. I mean, it's ridiculous how many great risk reward stories there are out there. But to your point, yes, I mean, Novo Resources, for example, I mean, Beatons Creek has been a serious underperformer. It's bleeding cash, but that's never been what my case about Novo has been. It's their absolutely enormous land position and amount of targets, etc. Would I wish that Beatons Creek would actually be free cash flowing right now? For sure. Can it be? Well, they have a lot of money, so I think they have a shot of turning it around, whether that be with some other deposit or whatever. But yes, typically I look for where there's material upside surprises to happen in terms of value. And that's, again, why I don't like taking on almost no upside risk outside gold price or greater fool theory, but take on a bunch of operating risk.
Well, Eric, I know a lot of people do like getting your thoughts on the earlier exploration stage companies and some of the discovery plays. So you had mentioned to me a company that I'm not familiar with, Tectonic Metals. What has you animated about this team or project, and why do you think the work they're doing will build value for shareholders?
Yeah, I really find this to be an interesting story. I mean, a lot of insider ownership. You have some good people involved. It's basically a microcap company. And if my math is somewhat correct, I'm not 100% sure on the shares outstanding, etc. But in my spreadsheet, which might be a bit outdated, I have it at an enterprise value of $6 million, which is, I mean, basically valued like it's crap and has nothing. But I got into Tectonic a while back based on their projects near the Pogo mine in Alaska. You know, closeology, neurology play, but there were soil samples and they hit, you know, some high grade hits. And I still think that that is, still a bank discovery, but there's something there for sure, which should be worth something. And they've, you know, been hitting some high grade stuff, you know, 10, 20 grams per ton over a few meters, etc. The interesting thing that really pushed it over the edge a few months ago or several months ago now, perhaps, they picked up the Flat Gold Project, which is 40 kilometers northeast of the giant Donlin Creek deposit, also in Alaska. It's the fourth largest placer mining district in the state, and not a lot of information was out there yet. So it's like it was hard to, you know, wrap your head around it. But now there's more information out there. And I remember a recent Crescat presentation where Quinton said he had been talking to management, and his opinion was that this Flat Gold Project could be huge. And if you look at the presentation that's up right now, they have a target called Chicken Mountain. That's a 4 kilometer long gold in soil anomaly. And there has been limited drilling, 6.9 thousand drill meters in 55 holes. Pretty much every hole hit, as far as I understand. Yeah, all drill holes intersected mineralization. And there's been some quite decent hits, like 1.36 grams over 36.6 meters. 1.28 grams over 31.7, and even some high-grade stuff like 12.5 grams per ton over 24.7 meters, although that includes 211 grams over 1.4 meters. So, you know, it's obviously the diluted grade over that interval would not be as good. But anyway, it's like, yeah, if you have a 4 kilometer soil anomaly, you have pretty much every hole is hit mineralization. The whole system is open at depth, open along strike, big gaps. It's like, of course, they're going to hit something. When I'm thinking out loud, you know, see the future early. What happens if a company that is valued this cheaply, we go into a hot environment again where juniors are in vogue. You have a project that looks absolutely massive on top of the other projects. They do some, let's say, confirmation drilling or some kind of work. And you're starting to get that, you know, narrative, let's say, of potentially, you know, Donlin 2.0. I'm not saying this is going to be a Donlin 2.0. I'm just saying that it's a huge target. There seems to be something really going on there. So I can see when we go from right now where potential and blue sky potential in particular is record cheap, let's say. I mean, it's totally priced out. Not even bank success is priced in. When we go to a sentiment high, it's going to be all about blue sky again. And that's why typically some juniors move the highest and why you saw Jerry Baldy go to $500 million in market cap in 2017, just based on blue sky potential alone. Not anything confirmed, just blue sky potential. So when we go into an environment like that, I really like juniors that could benefit the most from that kind of narrative, especially since right now, they're priced when that kind of narrative is not something anyone wants. They want the Barricks, they want the Franco Nevada. So when risk is record cheap, I kind of like the delta that will typically come about when you go from record cheap potential to when potential is getting record expensive at a sentiment high. So from bottom to peak, I think these kinds of stories can have absolutely massive returns, justified or not. So this is one I've been buying quite a bit because it's just, in my opinion, ridiculously cheap. I mean, it's like the market hasn't even, it seems to be aware that they picked up this project. And I would say that this would be a, you know, flagship project for any junior. So again, it's like you can say it's high risk, high reward, etc. But I would not be surprised that at the next sentiment high, all else equal, a story like Tectonic Metals could be up 300-400%, and especially since they actually have good management with skin in the game, etc.
Well, I appreciate you sharing both those companies with us. In full disclosure, I am a shareholder of IAD Gold, which is the ticker IAU, but Tectonic Metals, the ticker is TECT, and I appreciate you highlighting that company as one that can move a lot more than some of these more established plays when the sentiment swings the other direction. So, Eric, it's always great having you on the show. It's always great having you share your ideas with the audience here at the KE Report, and looking forward to our next conversation.
Yeah, and thanks, Chad. And consider me biased. I own shares of all companies mentioned, and some are banner sponsors like Novo.
Okay, thanks, Eric.
Yeah, thanks, man.